Novelist T.C. Boyle has always had a knack for finding loaded subjects for his fiction. He's written about identity theft, illegal immigration, and the Kinsey sex studies. His latest novel, When the Killing's Done, is no exception. It pits an animal rights activist who wants to save all animals against a biologist who's out to protect native animals from invading species. And the animal rights activist, Ave LaJoy, is quite a grumpy character.
If there's one thing he hates, it's a runny yolk. And toast so dry it shatters like a cracker before you can spread the butter. And rain. He hates the rain, too. 3 days of it now, making a mess of the streets and keeping shoppers out of the stores. Pathetic numbers, absolutely pathetic, in all 4 units, and with the Christmas season coming on, no less. Depressing people, drooling like bilge down the plate glass window at the Cactus Cafe, where he eats breakfast 5 days a week, and they still can't figure out what over-easy means. His dried-out toast is cold. The coffee tastes like aluminum foil, and it's cold, too, or lukewarm at best. And the newspaper has one stingy little article about what went down at the museum last night, tucked away in the community events roundup for Tuesday, November 20, 2001, the date in bolder type than the headline, as if to indicate that everything included beneath it would be just as mind-numbing and inconsequential as it had been the day before and the day before that. Under the headline, Protest at Museum Lecture, there's a scant 2 paragraphs that don't begin to get at the issue, and worse, don't even mention him or FPA by name, let alone set out the counterarguments he'd thrown right in the face of that condescending little bitch from the Park Service who was fooling nobody with her gray-eyed squint and her all-black outfit as if she were going to a funeral or a goth club or something, and all her tricked-up images of the cute little animals that just have to be saved in the face of this sudden onslaught by all these other ugly little animals made uglier by somebody's Photoshop manipulations. As if the birds wouldn't last another week when 150 years had gone by in complete harmony and natural balance with all the other birds and plants and the rats, too, something Alma Boyd Takasui, Ph.D., didn't bother to mention.
T.C. Boyle reading from his novel When the Killing's Done. The book is set on the Channel Islands, the wild islands 22 miles off the coast of California.
These islands are so fascinating in that people like the idea of being insular, of getting away from everyone else, so that Santa Cruz Island was owned by just a couple of individuals prior to when, you know, the Park Service took over and the Nature Conservancy. As recently as the late 80s, a man by the name of Cary Stanton owned 90% of the island. He had one house on it and a couple of far-flung ranches, and he was king of his own domain just 22 miles offshore. So it's something that I think we all want, particularly in an overcrowded world, our own space. Our own country, our own, you know, islands separated from the mainland.
These islands do appear to be utopias. It's the search for utopia that you've talked about so many times in the books that you've written, and this one too, and there is no utopia there, but people keep going for it. I'm fascinated by the 2 characters who are the main characters in this book, Alma Boyd Takasu and Dave LaJoy. They're extraordinary people, people you really, really, really want to try to find a way to like. One of them you do, and one of them, boy, there's no way that you can.
Well, I don't know. It was fascinating for me to look at some of the reactions from reviewers, and it's fairly equitable. People are taking sides, but surprisingly, some are very much behind Dave LaJoy, the animal rights activist. And to set this up quickly for those who haven't read the book, Dave LaJoy is a very angry animal rights activist. He wants to prevent the killing of any creature, hence the title, When the Killing's Done. Alma Boyd Takasui is very much like him. She is a biologist. She loves animals. She loves nature. They're both vegetarians. They don't want to harm anything. They only want to sustain them. But from her practical side, she understands that certain invasive species, like the rats on Anacapa Island, must be eliminated because they're destroying the birds that we've just heard about. And so the two come into collision, and they're both completely intransigent.
They're not as different from each other as they would like to think. And in fact, at one point, they thought they were going to be closer than they end up being. But when you first introduced Dave LaJoy, there isn't much question that he's not a very likable guy.
This is the trick of trying to create such a character. He is a bully. He's very angry. He is impatient. He's domineering, etc. Kind of a jerk, really. But on the other hand, what he wants is that animals should be free and not killed and not dominated by us.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the situation on Anacap. It's the first one of the conflicts that we go through with them, and it's the one that introduces both of these characters. There are rats there, not because of the island itself, which was more or less pristine, but because of man's interference. There was, what, a shipwreck, a steamer that went down, a paddle
yes.
wheel?
And in 1853, that is how the rats got to Anacapa. This was the wreck of the Winfield Scott, a paddle wheel steamer, 1853, coming down from San Francisco to Panama prior to the canal so that people could hike across and get on a boat and go to New York. And a lot of them, curiously and interestingly, were 49ers. And there was a lot of gold. They brought gold dust with them. They'd been out in the wilderness companing gold, and now they were wrecked on this island. No gold was lost. Everybody was saved. But when the ship went down, the rats came ashore and infested all three of these islets and were there until 2001, when the Park Service decided they must be eliminated because, of course, they're preying on the rare ground nesting birds there, eating their eggs and chicks. And so they devised a plan. This happened. I'm just dramatizing the events, by which they would bomb the island with Brodofecum, rat poison.
And it seems reasonable, I mean, if you don't look at it too closely, but of course you do look at it pretty closely. It seems reasonable mm-hmm. because the native species were being driven out by the rats. The rats were eating the eggs of the birds, and things were changed. So the Park Service decided to get rid of the rats and allow the native species to come back. That
yes,
seems
of course,
reasonable until you realize yeah. how.
Yes, of course. I mean, they. This is regretful, you know. I mean, it's regrettable, and they regret it. They don't want to kill animals. But as the biologists will say, rats are a species that is not in any trouble or danger of extinction and are living healthily throughout the world, as are the pigs and sheep and so on that were on some of the other islands. And so they were willing to sacrifice one animal to preserve a much rarer animal. And, of course, this is writ large on Santa Cruz Island when they had to eliminate the pigs and so on. And I'm illuminating actual events. There was a tremendous war over this between people like the PETA faction, for instance, animal rights activists, and the biologists. The biologists are using a kind of realpolitik here. They feel that, okay, certain things must be sacrificed in order to preserve this environment. The larger question, of course, is, who has the right to decide, and what's your baseline? I mean, where do you go back to? Before any human beings were here, before the Chumash Indians were there? As Dave says in one of his rages, why not restore it? It's like Jurassic Park. Why not restore it to when there were dinosaurs, you know?
And I suppose you could take this whole thing and start applying it to other questions about, you know, who owns what country and who has the right to drive any other person out. But we don't like to think about the relationship that might be parallel to these stories going on.
Yeah, our societies are terrifying. We are so lucky to be in a democracy and to be sitting here talking freely and writing books and doing what we like, because it seems that the real way of the world from the beginning and a large part of it today is just a bully boy society. Gangs take over a country and run it for their own benefit. And the way we view nature is this sort of the same thing.
Of course, you know, if we didn't have these things, you wouldn't be having any fun.
Yeah, it would be tough to live in paradise, as Bernard Shaw pointed out to us, because it's a lot more fun to live in a world full of dislocation and evil and so on, I suppose. But one of the reasons I think that I'm so obsessed lately with working over problems of invasive species and extinctions and our animal beings as opposed to our spiritual or intellectual beings is because it comes close to dealing with what are the final questions, the questions that nothing can answer, not religion or science either, which is why. We're raised and educated to save money, to brush our teeth, you know, and get educated and have reasons for being alive. But really, there is no reason. At root, we are simply as bereft as the other animals.
That's T.C. Boyle talking about his latest novel, When the Killing's Done.